Bastian had witnessed his uncle take an actual pound of flesh from an enemy, peeling the man's skin back slowly, relishing each of his screams. Bastian had been a boy of 9 then. And in fairness, the enemy in question had killed his father. Unease gathered in the base of Bastian's throat. His uncle's sudden change of heart was sure to be an ill omen. Nevertheless, he murmured his thanks and crossed the ballroom, pausing only to nod at those who vied for his attention, to beg their leave, with promises to return in a trice. All Bastian could think was reaching Celine, of reassuring her that his uncle's wishes had no bearing on his heart. Not that she needed any man's reassurances. An appreciative smile curved up one side of Bastian's face when he thought of how she'd burst into the ballroom 2 hours late, garbed in a gown of mourning, a devil-may-care attitude in each of her steps. It was one of the things he loved most about Celine. How little she gave a damn about anyone's good opinion. Bastian paused before the solid oak double doors leading onto the terrace, puzzled to find them locked from the inside. Tension banding in his arms, he unlatched the doors to step onto the balcony, and was met with a sight that iced the marrow in his bones. No one was there. Not a single soul lingered beneath the violet sky, taking in the night air. Celine Rousseau was nowhere to be found. His teeth clenched, and his jaw rippling, Bastian glided toward the empty railing, his eyes scanning every which way. He did not possess any of his uncle's preternatural gifts. He could not see through the darkness unimpeded, nor could he smell the scent of blood from a vast distance. And he most definitely could not blur through time and space in the blink of an eye. But Bastian had learned as a boy to notice things most mortals would overlook, like the smear of blood along the ledge, the color camouflaged in the veined travertine, and the 4 smudged symbols nearby, written in macabre ink, smelling of copper and salt. There had been a struggle, and it appeared the killer had taken Celine from the balcony. Rage spread through Bastian's veins. The rhyme of unmitigated rage. Always ice, never fire. Bastian ripped the ridiculous mask from his face. Without a glance back, he returned to the double doors, stopping at the threshold, his mind in a calculated turmoil. First he looked for his uncle, studied the crowd for the tall figure dressed in a long white opera cape. Thankfully, Nicodemus no longer appeared to be mingling among the Crescent City's unofficial gentry. It was likely he'd joined some of New Orleans' most influential gentlemen in a nearby antechamber to partake in a glass of cognac, a cigar, and a well of secrets. One of the Vieux Carré's most cherished rituals. Which meant Bastian had less than half an hour before his uncle noticed his absence. Without pausing to think, Bastian slid among the couples weaving across the ballroom floor, stealing Odette from her partner before the foolish young man could form a protest. She did not miss a step, nor did her smile falter at any moment, despite the fact that a single glance at Bastian's face told her something was terribly amiss. Odette Valmont represented the best of Bastian's found family. She, Nigel, Hortense, Madeline, Jay and Boone had surrounded him not long after he'd arrived on the city's docks almost a decade ago. An angry boy filled with loss and pain, whose haunted features had granted him the moniker, Le Fantôme. This strange collection of immortals had been tasked with only one thing, guarding Nicodemus's lone surviving heir, protecting their maker's greatest legacy. For nearly 10 years, Bane stood at Bastian's back, helping him blaze a trail through the city, all while keeping him safe from the terrors that had torn him from his parents and his sister.
"Take a turn with me on the balcony,"
Bastian said to Odette through a winsome smile, his words more breath than sound. With that, they reeled through the crowd, scattering the couples lingering on the periphery, before spinning through the double doors and into the velvet darkness. As soon as they were beyond earshot, Bastian stopped moving, his arms dropping to his sides.
"Celine is gone,"
he said quietly, aware that anyone or anything could be listening. Odette's sable eyes flashed black, her features sharpening, her canines lengthening past her rouged lips, piercing the elegant veil and bringing the world's most perfect predator to the surface. She paused to fill her lungs with air.
"I can smell her blood. She was here not 5 minutes ago."
"How can you be certain it's hers?"
She sniffed once more, her powdered head cocking to one side.
"Her blood sings an unusual melody."
Bastian's eyes narrowed, his lips pursing.
"Have you ever looked in her future?"
"Only that one time." Odette hesitated. "But it showed me nothing about this, Bastian. It simply told me what I shared with you weeks ago. A truth that has already come to pass. She will be the tamer of..."
"I remember."
The fury had reached Bastian's fingertips, his fists clenching and unclenching at his sides. It took all his control not to break something with his bare hands.
He knew better.
The greater the anger, the more destructive its force. It would be of no help if he lost his head to it.
"Can you track her scent?"
Odette's eyes returned to their normal shade, her nostrils no longer flaring like those of a jackal.
"I'm not sure. The rain makes it difficult for me to track things by scent. Have you asked the Hellhound for help? He's our best hunter."
"You know as well as I do that Boone won't lift a finger in defiance of Nicodemus,"
Bastian replied, ire sharpening his tone.
"He's too afraid."
"Our little hound has always been a lamb at heart,"
Odette rejoined softly.
"He took Nigel's death the hardest. Tonight was the first time he's come home in days."
Bastian glared at nothing, a twinge piercing through his chest. Time had become such a treasured commodity to them all.
"Can you give me an hour?"
Alarm flared across her lovely face.
"Your uncle forbade—"
"I don't give a damn what Nicodemus said,"
Bastian all but snarled. She reached for his hand, her gloved fingers cool to the touch.
"Every member of Le Coeur de Lion is under express orders to prevent you from going anywhere that involves Celine Rousseau. Please," she entreated. "Nigel died because we all failed to take this threat seriously. If something happens to you, I don't know what we'll all do."
"I'm not the boy you met years ago."
"I know, my dearest," she said. "Only Jay is a quicker draw than you. And we've all seen you shoot a man through the eye at 60 paces. But the killer is trying to force us out into the open, pick us off one by one," she continued, her eyes swimming, her tears turning pink. "The devil only knows why. This was supposed to have ended years ago."
"Odette."
Bastian gripped her by the shoulders, willing his expression calm.
"You're the only one I can trust. I know you care for Celine deeply. If we don't help her, she could die."
His insides twisted at the thought, the words burning in his throat.
"I cannot allow that to happen. You've spent years obeying your maker. Tonight, will you not help your friend?"
Odette studied him, her lips pressed in a line. A single stream of blood-tinged tears sliding down one cheek.
"I can't stop them from looking for you, Bastian."
"Can you at least give me an hour?"
She wavered, fighting to maintain her composure.
"I'll try my best. But the Hellhound will find you, Bastian, as he always does.
And we will all face the consequences."
"Thank you, Odette."
He kissed her forehead. Then he vaulted the balustrade and vanished into the darkness. Bastian kicked through the door of Michael's office at police headquarters without pausing for breath. He'd fully expected to find his childhood friend looming over his desk, just as he'd fully anticipated an altercation the moment he demanded that the detective share all his notes on the killer, who he might be, what he might be, and, most importantly, where he might be. The only sign of life Bastian found was a single lamp, its lone flame dancing cheerfully in a clear cylinder of glass. Fury blinded him for an instant, his hands longing to shatter the lamp into a thousand pieces. In an effort to allay his rage, Bastian scanned the cramped space for anything that might help him find Celine. To one side was a cot, blankets folded atop it in a neat little pile, a basket of sewing supplies beside it. His anger threatened to slide into despair. Many of the things he had treasured had been taken from him all too soon. These losses had taught him to hold fast to his heart, save for two exceptions: the love he had for his immortal family, and the love he had for his city. He'd refused to make room for anything else. Then, a month ago, a seed had been planted in his mind, watered by the hand of fate, by a wry smile and a fall of raven hair, by a girl who met him word for word, challenge for challenge. Something unraveled in Bastian's chest. It appeared there was now a third exception. He should have told Celine she had captured his heart, instead of allowing ridiculous social mores and expectations to stand in their way. If anything happened to her, the devil himself would answer for it. Bastian would take no mere pound of flesh. Before he was finished, he would see the demon's tears turn to ash. His lips pushed forward in calculation, Bastian paused on the large slate board running parallel to Michael's desk. He studied the collection of clues the detective had amassed, including the many insidious things the killer had said to Celine on multiple occasions. "Welcome to the Battle of Carthage. You are mine. Death leads to another garden. To thine own self be true. Die in my arms." A muscle ticked in Bastian's neck. He perused the old map affixed to a corner of the slate, his gaze catching on something he had missed before. Then Bastian straightened, his eyes going wide. Michael's notes were incomplete. The killer had said a peculiar thing to Celine the night he had stalked her through the streets of the Vieux Carré. Bastian's attention had been drawn by its absence on the otherwise meticulous board. "Come with me to the heart of Chartres." Chartres was a city south of Paris, famed for the beautiful cathedral at its heart. Rue de Chartres ran through the center of New Orleans, in the very middle of Michael's map. At the street's heart stood the three spires of St. Louis Cathedral. Had the demon been arrogant enough to lead them straight to his safe haven? To be sure, the church was an unusual place for a killer to find refuge. But it was also the exact kind of detail that would delight most of the immortals in Bastian's acquaintance, to seek sanctuary in a house of God.
"What in God's name are you doing here?"
a harsh voice demanded from behind him. Bastian turned to meet the wily figure of his former friend.
"I beg your pardon, Detective Grimaldi."
He kept his tone light, despite a surge of anger.
"I'll take my leave." "Like hell you will. You broke my door, you no-account fiend. You and your godforsaken temper. Will you ever learn?"
Michael cut his colorless gaze.
"What brought you to my office at this hour, peacocking about like a shitty king of France?"
"I had a momentary lapse in judgment,"
Bastian said in a blithe voice, crossing in front of Michael while he spoke, intent on making a swift exit.
"Which has since been rectified."
The young detective grabbed him by the front of his ivory waistcoat.
"Balderdash, answer my damned question. Why are you here?"
Bastian fought to keep his fury in check. He could not strike down the detective. He would not strike Michael down. Generations of bad blood forbade it.
"I don't have time for this pissing contest."
Gripping Michael's wrists, he twisted the detective's hands free of his absurd costume.
Send the bill to Jacques for the damage.
His grin turned arrogant.
Be sure to sample the vichyssoise the next time you're there. You always did favor life's simpler pleasures.
Again, he tried to leave.
Did something happen to Celine?
Michael stepped in Bastion's path, his nostrils flaring like he'd scented chum in the water. Her name on his lips rekindled Bastion's rage. If he told Michael the truth, there would be no way to contain the matter. The fool would order an entire garrison to descend on the cathedral, and precious time would be lost navigating his righteous idiocy.
I have no idea where Celine Rousseau might be. Wasn't that supposed to be your purview now?
Bastien sneered, attempting to push past his childhood friend once more. The clock in Michael's office ticked away the minutes. At any moment, Boone would find Bastien, his uncle trailing in the hellhound's well-heeled footsteps. And those moments were precious to Celine, just as she had become precious to Bastien. More precious than life itself. Michael shoved him back, his features mottled.
Answer me, Sebastian, before I call for the—
Bastian lashed out at Michael. Something he'd promised never to do, many years ago. To strike the young detective was in direct defiance of his uncle's edicts, for a Saint-Germain to strike a Grimaldi. His blow broke the bridge of Michael's nose, blood spurting from beneath it. A howl of rage flew from the detective's lips, causing footsteps to race toward them from below.
Take heed, Michael,
Bastian said through clenched teeth.
Never stand in my way again.
With that, he glided from the office, the beat of his heart thundering in his chest. There was nothing to be had for it. Sebastian Saint-Germain had just violated the Brotherhood's treaty. The final nail. Celine woke on her side, her cheek resting against cold stone. A cloying scent wound through her nose, her temples thudding with the slow beat of her heart. For a time she struggled to focus on anything, her vision swimming as if she'd consumed too much champagne. Licking her parched lips, Celine tried to lift her head. A cry of surprise flew from her mouth. Searing pain shot down her right arm, warm wetness trickling along her collarbone, dripping down her black bodice. The wound on her neck was still fresh, which meant not much time had passed since she'd been attacked on the terrace. The sharp scent of blood permeated the air, mingling with the perfume of incense. Again, Celine attempted to shift position, but she was weak. So very weak. At least the killer had left her alive. She supposed she should be grateful. For a harrowing instant, she had been certain her last breath on this earth would be on that balcony. Gritting her teeth through the pain, Celine fought to sit up, only to fail once more. Her hands were bound at her back, her feet tied at the ankles, the ropes like leaden weights. With her elbow, she checked to see if Bastion's silver blade was still concealed in the hidden pocket beneath her skirts. When Celine felt its comforting weight against her right hip, she let her head fall onto the smooth stone, wearied by even the simplest action. Her eyes locked on the frescoed ceiling above, as she counted to three in her mind. Then Celine heaved her knees to her chest, her taffeta skirts rustling through the silence, her brow beating with sweat. With Herculean effort, she looped her wrists over her feet, snapping several of the wooden hoops at her sides and twisting her left arm in the process. She gasped, blinking away hot tears of pain before taking in her surroundings. To her left stretched a familiar floor of black and white stone, patterned at a diagonal. An aisle lit by long tapers ran down its center, bracketed by wooden pews. Celine coughed, bitter amusement coiling through her stomach. Her earlier assumption had been correct. She was lying on the altar of St. Louis Cathedral at the very heart of Rue de Chartres. If she weren't so afraid, she would mock her attacker for his theatricality. Coughing again, she rolled to one side and fell from the stone surface, her teeth clacking together as her body hit the granite floor with a resounding thud. Shards of pain stabbed along her right side, 1,000 tiny needles burrowing into her skin. Celine bit her lower lip to keep from screaming. There was no time for her to succumb to pain. She needed to free her feet from their bonds so that she might at least attempt an escape. Celine sat up, drops of bright blood plinking against the cool stone. Then she tucked her knees beneath her chin and reached under the hem of her skirts to fiddle with the knots around her ankles.
I admire your resilience, Celine.
A warm voice pronounced from the shadows at her back. Its accent, refined, distinct of the British upper class.
But you've lost a lot of blood. I don't believe you'll get very far.
Fear knifed through Celine, a ghostly chill racing down her spine. But she'd already made a promise to herself. Fear would not dictate her actions tonight.
Who are you?
Her voice was hoarse, but firm.
Why have you brought me here?
Footsteps circled closer, the killer's heels striking the stone floor with tantalizing slowness.
I'm somewhat put out that you haven't realized who I am, being so damnably smart and all,
he continued, his tone mocking.
But in fairness, Milov, I did sound a bit different before I did.
He eased into a vibrant Cockney accent. The accent of London's working class. Its tenor caused Celine to tremble. Despite her bleeding wound, she turned her head to one side, disbelief splintering her thoughts.
Nigel! But you are dead, Celine whispered, when Nigel strolled into view, looking hale and hearty and whole, the smell of earth suffusing the air about him.
Shock began settling into Celine's limbs, causing her shoulders to shake.
I saw you! Your arm, your head!
She gasped, realization cinching the breath from her body.
It was...
you! Evil did not look the way she'd imagined it would. Nigel wasn't the bloodthirsty villain of her nightmares. He was Arjun's good-natured friend, Odette's silly, sweet boy, one of Bastien's closest confidants. Nigel clapped twice with slow deliberation, his gray cloak falling away from his arms, revealing a rumpled waistcoat and stained shirt sleeves.
You saw what we wanted you to see, love.
We?
He ignored her question, switching back to the polished accent of Grosvenor Square.
You've proved to be quite the little detective.
He changed his tone once more, as if he were donning or doffing a hat.
So smart. So bleeding sharp, especially for a bird.
His cockney resonated into the rafters. Dear God, he sounded mad. But Celine didn't sense any madness about him. His cheeks were pink, his eyes clear, his lips full. No, it wasn't madness. It was pride. Pride at playing to a crowd, like a revered actor on a stage. If Celine had to guess, Nigel was relishing the success of his deception, as if it offered testament to his greatness. Determination etched across her brow. If pride was his downfall, Celine would distract him further by encouraging him to talk about himself. She had done the same thing to the young man who'd attacked her that night in the atelier. Never mind that it had very nearly failed.
Please, tell me why,
Celine whispered, her expression pleading.
I don't understand why you would do such a thing.
While she spoke, her fingers worked at the knots beneath her skirts, willing herself to remain calm.
ever the brilliant little detective, aren't we?
Nigel said, in the Queen's English. He moved closer to the trio of rounded steps leading up to the altar, pausing to rest his right foot on the dark granite base.
By the by, did you ever manage to uncover the meaning behind the symbols I left for you?
No, Celine lied, shrinking away from him, her back pressed against the altar's base, the bonds beginning to loosen above her feet.
No matter, Nigel continued,
a casual air about him.
Impressive how quickly you determined they might be from an ancient language.
He braced an elbow on his bent knee.
You're only off by a few hundred years.
The language predates ancient Greek, Celine guessed.
A totally different civilization.
He switched to Cockney.
I even gave you a hint, I did.
Celine's shoulders slumped. Carthage.
Correct.
He smiled, switching back.
As to why I did this, there are any number of reasons. Why does anyone betray their loved ones?
He straightened, his expression somber.
For power, perhaps. That's something to which the Medicis, the Borgias, the Tudors, the Ptolemies, any number of influential families throughout history could attest.
He paused.
Well, perhaps it's because I never really loved them in the first place. Do you know why the Court of the Lions exists?
Nigel continued, his eyes shining with an otherworldly light.
Do you know why Nicodemus ripped me from my home in London's East End and turned me into a demon? Cursed to share his fate.
Anger rippled across his face.
To obey my maker until the end of time.
Celine shook her head, her first finger catching on a loop in her bonds, prying it free. A muscle worked beneath the skin of Nigel's forehead.
The Court of the Lions exists for the sole purpose of protecting Nicodemus Saint-Germain's legacy.
He snorted.
Sebastian, the last scion of the Saint-Germain family. I've guarded a mortal boy for nearly a decade. From the moment he sulked in a room full of books to the moment he crowned himself prince of our dark court, I have been forced to do his bidding.
Bitter laughter flew from his lips.
Hi, an immortal being with powers beyond your wildest ken, was yoked to a cursed breather, like a bloody watchdog.
Distaste tugged at his lips.
It's no wonder the Brotherhood despises us so.
The loop loosened infinitesimally more, Celine's fingers chafing from the effort. Why does Bastion need to be guarded? If she could buy herself but another minute...
Surely it hasn't escaped your notice that every other member of Bastion's family is dead. Do you think that's by accident or by design?
A retort threatened to barrel from Celine's mouth. She bit her tongue, tasting the salt of her blood. She could not succumb to anger, just as she would not be consumed by fear. It must be by design, Celine replied. Nigel brushed a thin layer of dirt from his shoulders and adjusted his shirt sleeves as if he were preparing for something.
A knot of unease formed in Celine's stomach. Bastion is the last piece of a retribution centuries in the making. And I, Nigel Fitzroy, will be the one to put the final nail in this coffin. The first of my kind to bridge the divide between the fallen and the Brotherhood.
He inhaled through his nose and spread his arms wide. Then he shouted once, as if in triumph, a fierce, guttural cry. It sounded like the roar of a beast, like the howl of a barely leashed creature relishing the spoils of his hunt. Its echo shook the very ground beneath Celine. No. Evil,
did not look the way she'd imagined it would. It looked far worse. It was hate wrapped in the guise of a friend. Celine fought back a tide of anguish, despondency settling around her, its shadow closing in. Before it could take root, she lurched to her feet and began to run. Her teeth chattering in her skull, she grabbed hold of the first pew, using it to propel her down the aisle toward the doors, expecting Nigel to stop her at any moment. Her bound hands itched to retrieve the dagger at her side, itched to defend herself, to drive the silver deep into the place his heart used to be. But once she unsheathed the blade, she would have only a single chance to use it. Now was not that time. Soft laughter trailed behind Celine, its echo searing through her soul. She could not stop to question why Nigel wasn't chasing her. There was no time to idle in curiosity. Choking back the rising bile, Celine continued racing down the aisle, her body taxed by every footstep. Why was she so goddamned weak? The doors to the cathedral stood sentinel less than 10 paces away. All that mattered now was escape. A rush of air gusted past Celine, her sight blurring from the breeze. She blinked, a cry of astonishment escaping her lips. Nigel was standing before the cathedral doors. Only a second before, he'd been at the opposite end of the church. Her senses dazed, Celine stumbled to a halt, grasping a pew to steady herself. How? She despised the way her voice trembled. What are you? A beat passed in awful silence. Then a slow smile spread across his face.
I thought you'd never ask.
His words were lethal in their calm. Nigel began to change. His eyes darkened to black, the color spreading like a drop of ink through water. His features sharpened, the tips of his ears tapering to points. Celine gripped the pew in her hands, swallowing her cries. Nigel's teeth had begun to lengthen, his canines resembling those of a wolf, gleaming like daggers in the low light of the tapers. Panic gripped Celine's stomach, acid collected on her tongue, its sharpness washing down her throat. She took a step backward, her heart hurling against her chest, demanding to be set free. Then Nigel blurred toward her. One moment he was 10 paces away, the next he loomed a hair's breadth before Celine, as if he'd manipulated the air around him like a ghost or a spirit or a demon of the night. Celine clasped her bound hands before her as if she were in prayer. She leaned against the pew, struggling to hold herself upright, hoping her perceived weakness would grant her an opportunity to draw the dagger from its sheath at her hip.
Ask me again what I am.
The scruff on Nigel's chin gleamed like molten copper, his eyes chips of obsidian. Celine could not respond, nor could she look away. With a soft laugh, Nigel grabbed her wrists in an iron vise, pulling her against his chest. Then he leaned forward and licked the wound on her neck. Celine choked back a scream. When he tilted his head to the cathedral's rafters, to the brilliant frescoes of angels overcoming their demon brethren, his tongue was stained crimson with her blood. A sound of supreme satisfaction rose from his throat. As if he found her blood delicious. As if he relished in meals of human blood. Vampire! A brutal shriek burst from Celine's lips. She tried to free her hands from her bonds so that she might grab the dagger at her hip, but Nigel laughed at her once more, reveling in her struggle, toying with her as if she were nothing but a plaything.
That's enough, Nigel.
The vicious admonition came from Celine's back, to the right side of the altar. An air of triumph filled the space when Nigel glanced over her shoulder. He whipped Celine around, his skin vibrating with anticipation. As if this had been his plan all along.
Bastien walked down the aisle toward them, his revolver trained on Nigel, his expression hewn from ice. Nigel wrapped an arm about her waist, pulling Celine toward him as if she were both a possession and a shield. Amusement tinged his voice.
The reckless Romeo has finally come to rescue his foolish Juliet. Tell me, Lord Lion, does our keeper know you're here?
His black eyes narrowed to slits.
What will Nicodemus say when he realizes you've risked his legacy for the life of a mortal girl?
Bastien ignored him.
He won't harm you again, Celine,
he said, his tone even, his words soft.
Not if he wishes to see another moon.
Nigel's arm tightened around her waist, drawing her back against the cool marble of his chest.
Don't lie to your love, Sebastian,
he said.
For I haven't had my fill, and her blood tastes sweeter than some warmed honey.
The beat of her heart thudding in her ears, Celine nodded to Bastien, her bound hands inching toward her pocket. With a subtle shake of his head, Bastien took a step forward, his thumb cocking the hammer of his revolver.
Your quarrel isn't with her. Let Celine go, and I'll do whatever you want.
Perhaps all I want is to drain her dry before your eyes. To watch you live the rest of your short, godforsaken life as the ghost.
The tips of Celine's fingers grazed the edge of her pocket, her breaths quickening in her throat. Bastien's lips pursed together, something flashing in the depths of his eyes.
Don't waste a winning hand on such foolishness. No one goes to all this trouble for something so small and petty. I know we can make a deal. His smile was cold, unforgiving. Name your terms.
You are in no position to make demands. Put down your gun, Bastien, Nigel said. And perhaps I'll agree to deal in good faith.
Fuck your good faith.
Bastien's smile widened.
Let her go. Now.
He took another step forward.
Aim true.
Nigel's icy fingers wrapped around Celine's neck, sending a shiver between her shoulder blades.
You may succeed in wounding me, but not before I rip the veins from her throat.
Celine's fingers closed around the handle of the silver dagger. Before any of them could make another move, Nigel lifted Celine off her feet as if she weighed no more than a feather. Then he sank his teeth into her neck. Terror raked its sharp claws across Celine, the pain almost blinding her as she struggled to wrench his auburn hair from his scalp, her fingers flailing against a wall of stone. Enough, Bastien commanded. For the first time, Celine sensed fear in his voice. Let her go and I'll put down my revolver. Nigel licked his lips before he replied.
Drop it first.
Bastien said nothing. He disengaged the bolt on his revolver, though he did not lower it.
Do it now, or I'll finish her off,
Nigel taunted.
It won't take much. She has so little left to give. Her heart slows with each passing moment.
Bastien, Celine whispered, letting her posture cave in on itself, hoping Nigel would mistake the gesture for helplessness. The same kind of helplessness her attacker had expected that night in the atelier. But Celine Rousseau was not helpless. While there was still breath left in her body, she intended to fight. Nigel would not escape this church unscathed. She swore it to the heavens. Trembling uncontrollably, Celine eyed Bastien sidelong, her fingers brushing across her right hip.
Bastien, please,
she repeated, as if she were begging him to save her. Though Bastion winced, he nodded once, letting her know he understood her unspoken directive.
"It appears we are at an impasse, Sebastian," Nigel said. "What do you propose we do now? Fight to the death like civilized monsters?"
He caught a trickle of blood dripping from Celine's neck and brought it to his mouth.
"Some of us are better monsters.
Some of us are better men."
Bastion's fingers tightened around his revolver. Then he pointed its barrel toward the floor. Nigel began lowering Celine to her feet, dropping his guard. She waited for the instant her toes found purchase, prepared herself to stab him in the throat, just as she had been instructed to do the night Bastion gave her the dagger. All the while, Celine continued trembling, as if fear had found refuge in her bones. As if she were the pathetic little lamb Nigel had expected all along. She was no lamb. She was a lion. Bastion set down his revolver, unfolded to standing, as Nigel released Celine. The next instant, the vampire blurred toward Bastion in a frenzy, his fangs tearing into Bastion's throat. Celine hurled herself at Nigel's back, the dagger in her hand. Her fury past the point of reason, Celine stabbed Nigel at the base of his head and the side of his neck over and over again, a snarl on her lips. With an inhuman roar, the vampire whipped around, dark blood spurting from his wounds. He flung Celine through the air, her shoulders slamming into the edge of the pews, knocking the wind from her lungs and cracking something in her ribs. Nigel staggered, the silver blade embedded in the side of his throat. Rage contorting his face, he stalked towards Celine, blood gushing down his body, his hands outstretched. A breeze raced through the nave, the sound of beating wings trailing in its shadow. Then something grabbed Nigel, snatching him from sight, the shrieks of a wounded beast fading into the darkness. Her body, all but broken, Celine struggled to her feet, seeking a point of clarity beyond the pain. A sharp sensation radiated through her chest, her vision swimming as she looked forward. Bastion leaned against a wide column of marble, one hand pressed beneath his ear, a strange expression in his eyes. He stumbled to his knees. Then Celine saw the cascade of crimson dripping from his neck.
Bastion!
She rushed toward him, catching him before he struck the stone floor. Crouching by his side, Celine pressed her bound hands atop his, trying to staunch the gaping wound at his throat. Blood oozed from between their fingertips, flowing fast and hot, like a river bursting through fissures in a dam. Several brushes of air gathered on all sides of them. Celine did not have to look to know who was there. The rest of the court had arrived, not a moment too soon. Bastion opened his mouth, the light in his gaze fierce. He tried to speak, but a trail of blood streamed from his mouth.
Don't talk. Celine held him close. You're going to be fine. Nicodemus will be here soon. Hold on to your strength.
She placed pressure on his wound until the tips of her fingers turned white, but Bastion's blood only flowed faster, its warmth soaking through to her skin. A small smile curved his lips. With his other hand, he gripped her fingers tightly. In his eyes, Celine saw a sky filled with stars. She saw a boy who would die for her, just as she would kill for him.
You're going to be fine,
Celine repeated, her words tremulous, tears trickling from the tip of her nose.
It won't end like this. I know it won't. I haven't even told you I'm falling in love with you.
Someone was weeping softly behind them.
Damn it, don't cry,
she yelled over her shoulder.
There's nothing to cry about. He's going to be fine. We are all going to live here together, and I will love Bastion until the last star falls from the sky.
Her voice broke.
Where is Nicodemus?
Celine shouted, her words resonating with imperiousness.
Find him at once!
The goddess within her smiled a sad smile, and Bastian's eyes fell shut, his hand coming to rest on the floor beside Celine's feet. Many paths to happiness. Nicodemus Saint-Germain stood over the dying body of his nephew, the last surviving member of his line, the sole reason for his existence. Everything he had striven for his entire mortal life, his legacy, was draining onto a church floor before his very eyes. Fitting, for he'd destroyed hundreds of lives over the centuries. So many deaths, so much loss. There would always be a reckoning. Time had taught Nicodemus that inescapable truth.
Please,
Celine begged, tears streaming down her cheeks as she clutched his nephew's head to her chest, blood pooling in a widening circle around them.
Save him!
The weight on Nicodemus's soul had already begun to settle.
No,
he said simply, brokenly. It had been the same after he'd lost Bastian's sister, Emily, after their parents had paid for Nicodemus's greatest mistake.
I refuse to accept that, Celine shouted. Do something! Don't let him die!
To his right and left, Nicodemus felt his immortal children stirring. Boone openly wept. Farther away, Jay stared at a point of nothingness, his features wan, his fingers stained by the evidence of Nigel's final reckoning. A cloud of anger surrounded Hortense, Madeline swiping a lone tear from beneath her sister's chin. Along the periphery, Odette inched forward as if to subvert his orders, her sable eyes wide.
Stop,
Nicodemus commanded. They all straightened like soldiers.
I will not be defied in my wishes. Sebastian was always meant to live and die as a mortal. Nothing is worth the price of this curse,
he said, his tone firm.
I swore to myself I would never turn a member of my human family into a bloodthirsty monster.
It's worth any price in the world if Bastian lives,
Celine pleaded. A hard light shone in Nicodemus's eyes.
Sebastian has already proven he is too weak for this life. He did not heed my warnings when he fell in love with a mortal girl, and now his life is forfeit. If he were one of us, it would be the same. Our enemies would exploit these weaknesses, and there would always be something left for him to lose.
Then protect him! Make him stronger! Just save him!
She cried. Nicodemus stared down at the cursed girl, the cause of his nephew's undoing. He knew Celine loved Sebastian, could see the truth of it in her haunted gaze, and it left him cold, bleak, unfeeling.
I stayed away so my enemies would not be drawn to Sebastian, so they would not be tempted. I surrounded him with my immortal children so that they would always protect him. I sacrificed everything I loved to keep him safe.
Nicodemus inhaled, a knot of pain taking shape around the emptiness in his heart.
My family has always been my weakness, and now my enemies have destroyed me with it.
He shook his head.
Love is an affliction to our kind. I will not remake Bastian only to watch him fall prey to it again. I'm sorry.
What do you want me to do?
Celine whispered.
What can I say that will make you save him?
Nothing. Whatever we are in our human lives becomes
magnified by immortality. What Bastion loves now will be an even greater weakness.
Nicodemus studied Selene, watching his words shatter her last hope.
Forget all this, child. Live your life apart from this wretched world.
An approximation of sympathy laced his features. Nicodemus turned toward his immortal children, ready to take leave, to sit with his grief, pondering all he had lost tonight, to flee this cursed city forever.
What if I promise to forget Bastion?
Selene said from behind him. Nicodemus did not move. She stumbled to her feet in a rustle of black taffeta, the wound at her neck filling the air with an intoxicating scent.
You told me you could help me forget. That Bastion would respect my choice. If I forgot him, if I was no longer a weakness, would you save him?
Nicodemus took a step toward the doors of the cathedral.
You said there were many paths to happiness, she continued. If I can choose a different one, will you not do the same?
He stopped, turned to look at Marceline Rousseau over his shoulder. Her hands were still bound, her body covered in blood, a great deal of it her own. Still the girl refused to capitulate. A part of Nicodemus admired her stubbornness, her unwillingness to fold in the face of such odds. His gaze fell on his nephew's battered body, on the last signs of life lingering within. Sighing in defeat, Nicodemus looked away.
Bastion is the last of your kin! Are you ready to walk this earth alone?
Selene yelled.
Because I would rather lose him forever than watch him die.
Nicodemus met the eyes of his immortal children, saw the weight of his loss reflected in their faces.
No, it is not meant to be.
He straightened and began walking away.
Nicodemus!
Selene screamed, the anguish in her voice soaring to the rafters above.
Nicodemus Saint-Germain!
Again, Nicodemus stopped. The echo of his family's name circling beneath the frescoed ceilings of the cathedral, the sound of her pain stirring the shreds of his heart, bringing it back to life.
Do we have a deal?
Love is not love. The first of my people hailed from Carthage, from a time when blood reigned supreme, when monsters and mercenaries ruled the known world. This was the beginning of the Brotherhood. Not much has changed since then. I stand along the pier, gazing toward the waters of the Mississippi, at peace for the first time in a decade. When I first heard the news that Sebastian Saint-Germain had been struck a fatal blow in the skirmish at the cathedral, strange pangs coiled through my chest. I know now it was the last vestiges of my weak human heart finally dying, so that I might embrace the better, stronger version of myself. There is no chance Nicodemus will have turned Bastion. Not when he refused me 10 years ago. Amusing how tethered to his morals the great Nicodemus Saint-Germain can be, especially considering all the death and destruction he has wrought over the centuries. Bastion was the last living scion of the Saint-Germain line. Now the one thing this 400-year-old leech fought to protect above all is gone. His purpose has been taken from him.
as mine was taken from me. I have dismantled his legacy, and it is sweet. The kind of sweetness that overshadows the bitterness, consuming it whole. For I once loved Bastion more than I loved myself. I even gave my human life for his. My beautiful little brother. But my loyalties lie elsewhere now. With the creatures who offered me the gift, Uncle Nico refused to grant me 10 years ago. With the true immortal beasts of the other world. The same ones the vampires have always cast aside. To be used as watchdogs and fed the scraps from their dinner table. Treated as nothing more than fodder. In a centuries-long war with the Sylvan Vale. But no matter. That is a tale for another time. Once, I walked among the fallen, saw them as family. But I am no longer a Sanjeman. I do not need to mourn the death of my brother. He was complicit in my uncle's misdeeds. His impetuousness brought about my mother's death those many years ago. Bastion is the reason no one sought to save me, a mere girl, destined to become nothing. My thoughts linger on Céline Rousseau, a formidable quarry, I will admit. She was close to uncovering the truth of what I have become. But close counts only in cannon fire and horseshoes. It was something my father used to say. I move from my spot along the pier, slinking toward the shadows beneath it, comfortable in my skin for the first time in ages. The stars twinkle with abandon, oblivious to how they exist by the grace of the moon. But I am aware. She is our mother in all ways. Luca will be waiting for me, as he always did, even when we were children. Beneath the silver light of our mother moon, we will run free together. Our families may have been mortal enemies in life, but it doesn't matter now, for I am among his kind. One of them. A member of the Brotherhood evermore. And Luca will always love me, as he has for over a decade. I love him, too, in my own way. Just as I loved Marin. Beneath the dark, the change begins. The magic burns through my bloodstream, sending shudders down my spine. My fingers curl into claws, my fangs lengthen, my long hair twists and reshapes, and I become who I was always meant to be. Émilie Leloup, an immortal wolf. Howling at the moon, ready for whatever may come.
Celine opened her eyes with a start, as if she had fallen from a tower in her dreams. Her body felt battered and sluggish, like the hull of a ship after a summer storm. A cloud hovered over her mind, causing everything around her to appear filtered, as if through a haze. She cleared her throat with a weak cough. Immediately, a figure moved to her side.
Celine?
It sounded like the voice Celine wanted to hear, but different. In her dreams, it had been different.
Michael.
His name cracked on her tongue. She cleared her throat again, realizing how dry it was. How long she must have slept.
Do you want some water?
He asked.
Please.
Celine drank from the cup Michael held to her lips. Every movement he made was slow, careful, unmistakably tender. Celine blinked hard, but the film clung stalwart to the edges of her vision.
What happened to your nose?
Her brow furrowed.
Did someone hit you?
Annoyance flickered across Michael's bruised face.
I'm fine.
Is Pippa all right?
Pippa is fine. Everyone is fine.
What happened?
She swallowed.
I can't remember how I got here.
Michael nodded.
You've been through quite an ordeal.
It feels like there are holes in my memory.
That's normal after all that happened.
Michael shifted a hand to cover hers.
Later, I promise we can piece everything together. But now you should rest.
Celine swallowed again, trying to banish the taste of metal and herbs from her tongue. She fell back against the pillows, the ache in her side causing her to cringe.
Thank you, Michael. It's comforting to know you are here with me.
Where else would I be?
He squeezed her hand, his pale eyes warm. The openness in his expression soothed her, as if he had nothing he wished to hide from her, ever again. Perhaps Celine had been wrong to discount his affections as she had in the past. Michael Grimaldi had always felt like a piece of a puzzle that simply wouldn't fit. Today, something felt different. Michael continued speaking.
Pippa left less than half an hour ago to get some sleep. He smiled to himself. She'll be furious when she discovers you woke in her absence.
He turned toward the door, his strides long, capable, quick.
I'll send for her soon.
Celine sat up, her body screaming in protest.
Please don't leave. Not yet.
She didn't know the reason, but she didn't want to be alone. He curved a sardonic brow at her, then reached for the wooden chair at the end of her hospital bed.
I'm simply moving closer.
With a grateful sigh, Celine sank into the pillows once more. She looked around. The cover strewn across her bed resembled the shawl she had last seen on Nonna's shoulders. A vase of cheerful yellow flowers rested on a worn table beside her. At the foot of her bed was a small, well-worn tome. What is that? Michael paused while he sat.
It's a collection of Shakespeare's sonnets. I've been reading them for research.
An awkward smile tugged at his face.
A girl with a soul of iron told me I should write her a poem.
Celine blinked, the memory returning to her, indistinct at first, then slowly taking shape. When Michael reached out to grasp her hand again, she hesitated a moment, wishing the rest of her mind would clear of all its clutter, wishing she could fill the gaps in her memory. Then she threaded her fingers through his. Will you read one to me? Michael grasped her fingers tightly, then began to speak in a steady voice.
Let me not to the marriage of true minds admit impediments. Love is not love
which alters when it alteration finds, or bends with the remover to remove.
Epilogue. First there was nothing. Then there was everything. This is Lauren Ezzo. We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of The Beautiful by Renee Ahdieh. This program was directed by Joseph Ward. Executive producer Sarah Jaffe. Text copyright 2019 by Renee Ahdieh. Production copyright 2019 Penguin Random House, LLC. All rights reserved.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.